Chapter 51. Reacher didn't move the car. It was in as good a place as any. He said, "Clearly Omaha isn't talking to Kansas City. If your guy had known Dawson and Mitchell were on the way here, he wouldn't have asked Goodman to be his eyes and ears."
"More likely the other way around,"
Sorensen said.
"Kansas City isn't talking to Omaha. They're operating independently, which is typical for a bunch of counter-terrorism hotshots."
"Do they think I'm a terrorist?"
"They know you were driving the car for King and McQueen, who killed a guy you're pretty sure was CIA, which puts you all in the relevant category, wouldn't you say?"
"There was a black guy in a pickup truck who almost stopped for me, not long before King and McQueen showed up. I was kind of glad at the time. I was cold, and it looked like his heater was busted. Now I wish he'd stopped. I'd be in Virginia by now."
"With pneumonia, maybe."
"Let's go get you a shirt and a shower."
"But we only have half an hour, or less."
"Until what? No one's got a beef with you, and no one will even see me."
"They think I've been kidnapped. They'll rescue me. Same thing as taking me prisoner."
"Your boss hasn't talked to them. They know nothing about the alleged kidnap. They said I was traveling with you, not holding you hostage. They'll say hi, you'll say hi, they'll ask you about the guy with the nose, you'll say you have no idea where he is. That's if they find you at all, which they won't. They won't want a room at the motel, and even if they do, the clerk won't put them in the same room as you. That's not how motels work, generally."
"Okay," Sorensen said. "Let's go."
Goodman's car had no GPS on the dash and no map in the glove box. No obvious need for either thing. Presumably, Goodman had known his county like the back of his hand. Probably he'd grown up there and lived there all his life. So Reacher navigated by memory and common sense and guesswork. He was about 2 miles north and east of the crossroads, and he needed to get 3 miles due north of the crossroads. So he threaded basically west through the checkerboard and came out on the main drag opposite the sad line of for sale farm junk. He paused there and checked both ways and saw nothing to worry about. No bureau sedans, no SWAT teams, no armored trucks. No local deputies, no roadblocks, no choppers in the air. So he turned north and cruised the last mile and looped in behind the convenience store. Sorensen detached Goodman's phone from its cradle and put it in her bag. She went in the store, and 5 minutes later she came out again with the same kind and the same size of shirt that Del Fuenzo had been given, and a smaller, softer packet, Reacher guessed, was dollar underwear and socks. The best-looking motel was on the other side of the road, so Reacher drove over there but parked some distance away. He figured it was better if Sorensen approached the place on foot. In his experience, hotel keepers were habitual gossips, and he didn't want a countywide bulletin about a stranger driving the sheriff's car. He watched Sorensen go into the office, and he saw her come out again 5 minutes later with a key. He watched her walk down the row of rooms, and he saw her go into one. 30 minutes, he figured, for a fastidious woman whose last shower had been more than 30 hours ago. Or 40 minutes, possibly, if she was the kind of person who dried her hair with electricity. He moved the car and parked it behind a bar that was closed in the daytime. Sin City as a whole was pretty quiet. The diners all had signs reading "Last Food Before the Interstate," and the gas stations had signs reading "Last Gas Before the Interstate." He figured the Chamber of Commerce could have put up a sign saying "Last Everything Before the Interstate" without a word of a lie. But not many drivers were availing themselves of their final opportunities. He got out of the car and locked it up and walked away. He crossed the road and looped around behind Del Fuenzo's cocktail lounge. The red Mazda was still there. 5 doors, 4 seats. The locks had been jimmied, presumably by Sorensen's tech team. The interior was bland and clean. The driver's seat was set for a person of average height. A rental car, typical in every respect. "If in doubt, drink coffee," was Reacher's operating principle, so he headed back across the road to the diner nearest Sorensen's motel. He got a high-back corner booth with a blank wall behind him and a heavy pottery mug full to the brim with a strong brew. A bad receptacle, but decent coffee. And a good tactical position. He could see the room, and he could see the street. The restroom corridor was 3 feet from his left shoulder, and there was a fire exit at the end of it. He watched out the window and saw traffic on the road. An 18-wheeler heading north, and a similar thing heading south. A battered pickup truck, a boxy four-wheel drive covered in mud, and a delivery van lacy with rust. And then a dark blue Ford Crown Victoria coming north. Same make and model and color as Sorensen's car. Needle antennas on the trunk lid, just like Sorensen's antennas. FBI. Two men in it. It was going slow. Too slow. A telling percentage slower than normal caution. It was going at search speed. The driver was scanning left and the passenger was scanning right. Reacher watched it crawl past. He thought the two guys in it were two of the four he had seen in the lot behind the FBI building in Omaha. Maybe. Dawson and Mitchell. Possibly. He sipped his coffee and measured time and speed and distance in his head. And right on cue, the blue Crown Vic came back, now heading south, still going slow, the two heads in it turning as the two pairs of eyes scanned the shoulders, the buildings, the people, the cars, pausing here and there and hanging up and then jumping ahead again. Then the car slowed some more and turned in. It bumped over a broken curb and crunched over the gravel into the diner's front lot and came closer and parked with its nose a yard from Reacher's window. The two guys in it sat still. No urgency, no purpose. A coffee break, after a long and fruitless search. That was all. Reacher was pretty sure he recognized them. He was pretty sure they were Dawson and Mitchell. They were blinking and yawning and wagging their necks to ease out the kinks. They were dressed in dark blue suits and white shirts and blue ties. They looked a little ragged, a little tired. One looked a little taller and a little thinner than the other, but otherwise they were a matching pair. Both had fair hair and red faces. Both were somewhere in their early 40s.
Do they think I'm a terrorist?
They know you were driving the car for King and McQueen.
They got out of the car together and stood for a moment in the cold. The driver stretched with his arms straight and his hands held low, and the passenger stretched with his elbows bent high and his fists near his ears. Reacher figured they would have Glocks and shoulder holsters and cuffs on their belts, and the Patriot Act and unlimited authority and all kinds of national security bullshit to back them up. They glanced left, glanced right, and located the diner door. Reacher took a last sip of his coffee and trapped $2 bills under his mug. Then he slid out of his booth and stepped into the restroom corridor. He heard the front door open, and he heard two pairs of shoes on the tile. He heard the hostess take two menus out of a slot. He walked down the corridor and pushed through the door and stepped out to the back lot. He crossed the gap between buildings and tucked in behind the motel and tracked along its rear wall. He stopped at the only bathroom window with steam on it. He tapped on the glass and waited. The window opened a crack and he heard a hairdryer shut off. Sorensen's voice said,
Reacher?
He asked, Are you decent? She said,
Relatively.
He stepped up and looked in through the crack. She had a towel tucked tight around her. The top edge was up under her arms. The bottom edge was considerably north of her knees. Her hair was wet on one side of her parting and dry on the other. Her skin was pale pink from the steam. She looked pretty good. He said,
Your Kansas City pals are in the diner.
She said,
They're not my pals.
Did your tech people call yet?
No.
What's keeping them?
It's probably a complicated procedure.
I hope they're good enough.
Good enough for what?
To tell me what I want to know.
That will depend on what you want to know, won't it?
I'll wait in the car, he said. It's behind a bar, two buildings along. She said,
Okay.
The window closed, and he heard the click of the latch and the roar of the hairdryer starting up again. He walked on north, through the back lot, past trash bins, past a pile of discarded mattresses, past an empty rotting carton that, according to the printing on the outside, had once held 2,000 foam cups. He crossed the open no-man's land and slipped behind the next building, which seemed to be another cocktail lounge. He stepped over an empty bottle of no-name champagne and stopped. Dead ahead of him, and 30 yards away, was Goodman's car, behind the bar, exactly where he had left it. But stopped tight behind it in a perfect T
was another car, facing away. A sand-colored Ford Crown Victoria. A government car for sure, but not FBI. Not the same as Sorensen's car, or Dawson and Mitchell's. It had different antennas on the trunk lid, and official U.S. license plates. Its motor was running. White exhaust was pooling around its pipes. It was blocking Goodman's car. Deliberately or inadvertently, Reacher wasn't sure. There was one man in it, behind the wheel. Reacher could see the back of the guy's head. He had sandy hair, the exact same color as his car. He was wearing a sweater. He was on the phone. A sweater meant no shoulder holster. No shoulder holster meant no gun. No gun meant the guy wasn't a plainclothes marshal or any other kind of an operational agent. Not the Justice Department or the DEA or the ATF or the DIA or any of the many other three-letter agencies. Ultimately, the sweater meant the guy was no threat at all. A bureaucrat, probably. Clothes maketh the man. Reacher walked on and stopped right next to the guy's window and knocked on the glass. The guy startled and peered up and out with watery blue eyes. He fumbled for his button. The window came down. Reacher said, "Move your car, pal. You're blocking me in." The guy took his phone away from his ear and said, "Who are you?" Reacher said, "I'm the sheriff." "No, you're not. I met the sheriff last night, and he's dead anyway. He died this morning, so they say." "I'm the new sheriff. I got promoted."
"What's your name?"
"What's yours?" The guy looked momentarily taken aback, as if suddenly conscious of a grievous etiquette offense. He said, "I'm Lester Lester with the State Department." Reacher said, "Your parents were very economical people, weren't they?"
"Family tradition."
"Anyway, Lester, I need to get going now." The guy made no move. Reacher said, "Two choices, Lester. Roll forward or backward." The guy didn't either thing. Reacher saw the wheels turning in his head. A slow process. But the guy got there in the end. He stared. A big man. A broken nose. He said very loudly, "You're the person we're looking for, aren't you?" "No point asking me. I have no idea who you're looking for."
"Get in the car."
"Why?"
"I need to take you into custody."
"Are you kidding?"
"You think the security of our nation is a joke?"
"I think involving people like you in it is."
Very loudly.
Reacher was suddenly aware of the phone, still in the guy's hand. Who was he on the phone to? The diner? Maybe the guy wasn't so dumb after all.